No Andy yet. Anil Jain.
I'm here.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Brad Gescheider.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Hi, good morning.
Christina Caraballo.
Good morning, I'm here.
Clem McDonald. No Clem yet. And Cynthia Fisher, I believe she's going to be late as well. Denise Webb.
Present.
Jenny McCollum.
Present.
John Kansky.
I'm here.
Ken Kawamoto.
Good morning.
Leslie Leonard.
I'm here.
Michael Adcock. No Michael yet. Patrick Soon-Shiong. No Patrick yet. Raj Ortani.
Good morning.
No, good morning, Raj.
Oh, I'm here. Good morning.
Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Steve Reedy.
Present.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Tina Esposito.
I'm here.
Valerie Gray.
Good morning. Present.
Good morning. And our federal representatives, do we have Chesley Richards on the line? Not yet. Kate Goodrich. Lauren Thompson.
I am here.
Ram Sharam.
I am here.
Good morning. And from the OMC team, besides myself, we have our national coordinator, Dr. Don Rooker, Genevieve Morris, John White, Elise Anthony, Steve Posnack, and Seth Pazinski. We have a full agenda today. We have quite a bit to go through, so I want to thank everyone for your time and joining us today. I hope that the weather does not interrupt your plans too much. And with that, I will turn it over to our national coordinator, Dr. Rooker.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Hi, everybody. Yeah, want to echo Lauren's hopes that weather's not too interruptive for folks. Before we get into today's thing, just wanted to make sure everybody knew about the initiative that we're doing at HHS and CMS on MyHealthyData. So MyHealthyData, all one word, and Blue Button 2.0. So we're building on the work of ONC and CMS and all the prior ONC coordinators in the past in next steps in getting data out. So CMS is going to be releasing Medicare claims data. And what's different about Blue Button 2.0 is it's going to be using the OpenAPI FHIR protocol as well as OAuth 2. And, you know, I think we'll be the first of a number of efforts there with the ultimate goal of getting everything on people's smartphones and in control. As you probably have heard, a lot of interest from the White House. Jared Kushner joined SEMA in announcing this in Las Vegas. And Secretary Azar has obviously made a number of, in his very short tenure as secretary so far, has made a number of statements about interoperability, really getting to the work of the HITECH committee. So that's exciting. I think today we're going to have a brief update on the USCDI from the USCDI task force. I'm going to spend more time on the Trust Exchange Framework Task Force. And having been on these kind of committees and subcommittees, I just want to thank everybody who's worked. I've read the stuff that you've put out so far, and there's a lot of work and thought and great ideas and things that, you know, we need to, you know, to do next steps on together in there. And I just wanted to thank people. So with that, I will turn it over, I believe, to Carolyn.
Yes, thanks, Don. Our first agenda item this morning has to do with reviewing the agenda
and the approval of minutes. Dr. Rucker just went through what we'll be covering today, the brief update on the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability Task Force update, and then getting into talking about the Trusted Exchange Framework draft recommendations and voting on that. First, we need to approve the minutes. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
And do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor of approving the minutes from our February meeting, would you please acknowledge that by saying aye?
Aye.
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 And anyone opposed to approving the minutes from the February meeting, would you please signify by saying no? And anyone who wishes to abstain from approving the minutes, please note that now. Thank you. We have approved the February minutes, and we should be ready to go with our next update.
Thank you, Carolyn. Before we move on to the USCDI update, I just want to do a quick audio check. Do we have Robert on the line yet? And Robert, are you able to hear us? Okay, we'll circle back to that. Apologies about that. I will turn it over to Christina and Terry.
Thanks very much. This is Terry O'Malley. Christina, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present our draft recommendations. We'll go through this 13-slide deck quickly in order to leave as much time as possible for your comments. And we'd especially value comments that suggest alternative directions. So next slide, please. This is the outline of our presentation. We'll show you the members of the task force, review the charge, and get to our recommendations. We'd also like to thank the task force members, next slide please, who are the following. And they hail from a wide variety of backgrounds and interests, and they've provided a very spirited discussion, which we have tried to distill. Next slide, please. Our charge, as taken from the USCDI draft, we're going to focus really on the four specific charges: how to get stakeholder feedback, proposed stages for draft data class promotion with objective criteria, how and by how much to expand the USCDI, and the frequency of publication. We're going to concentrate on the proposed stages for data class promotion, which were the subject of extensive discussion, and touch only briefly on the other charges, which need a lot more discussion before we can present a consensus. So the next slide, please. Here are the proposed categories, 3 old and 3 new. This is an expanded maturation model for data classes with 6 rather than 3 stages as originally proposed. And in this presentation, each stage has its own slide, and each slide is formatted in a similar way. It'll be the principal purpose of the stage, kind of what it does, what is needed for entry into the stage, what happens in the middle, and what it takes to get to the next stage. So we focus mostly on the inputs and outputs of each stage. Much of our work over the next month will be to add clarity around what happens within each stage to produce the required output. So next slide, please. Since spring training for baseball is underway, I thought it was really time for a baseball analogy, and these categories roughly align with tryouts in stage 1, making the team in stage 2, near the batter's box in stage 3, at the plate and getting a hit in 4, and the USCDI is the opportunity for an illustrious career culminating in stage 6, which is the data class fame. So we'll start with proposed status. We felt that any stakeholder should have barrier-free access to propose data elements or classes with specific value to them. No restrictions based on who can propose or what they propose. The purpose of this stage is to give every stakeholder a voice, and not just those with the loudest voices. the data class gets in because somebody proposes it. Then there's a process that we have yet to fully identify in which data elements or classes proposed by different stakeholders are aggregated to create a data set with value to a wider group of stakeholders. The value of the whole, we hope, would be greater than the sum of its parts. And the net value of this data set, we'll have to figure out how to estimate its value based on the cost and value to each of its stakeholders. The data sets and preliminary data classes get out of this stage when there is apparent net value based on any number of measures, cost, efficiency, improved quality, safety, value to a government priority, value to society. You make it out of the tryouts when a coach appreciates your value. Next slide, please. This starts the next stage. The purpose of this stage is to get to a much more tightly specified data class after demonstrating value. So content, definitions, substitution where appropriate of previously standardized data elements. The work in this stage is meant to balance parsimony with yet the broadest use possible. And this process is intended to create a data set with broad value and clear specifications, which becomes an official data class with the addition of use cases. And at this stage, you know, it's basically made the team and it's ready for limited testing in stage three. Next slide, please. The emerging status. So emerging status puts the data class on the radar. It's now ready for testing and further specification in limited settings. And testing will likely lead to further adjustments and additional clarity. Semantic interoperability, harmonization occur here. The data class also undergoes a final sort of net value assessment. Do the benefits still outweigh the costs now that we have a better idea of what the costs are? The data class emerges to candidate when it has sufficient value and adequately specified so the interoperability can be supported. It will emerge ready for commercial deployment and testing. Next slide, please. So the candidate status means that the data class is ready for testing at scale, and that testing in a commercial enterprise can and will occur. We hope in this stage that barriers to wide-scale deployment are identified and mitigated. And what remains after the conclusion of this stage is deployment at scale. So next slide, please. So finally, we get to USCDI. So the difference, one of the differences with this model is that we don't think the USCDI is the end of the line. So the purpose of the USCDI is to highlight the data class and take deployment to scale across the country using all of the policy levers available. So admission to the USCDI alerts industry that this data class has reached priority status and will advance, called out by CMS, HHS, anyone else who has a lever to. And data classes will get out of USCDI only when they've achieved nationwide deployment and ease of access. And at this point, the data class can retire to the Hall of Fame, having achieved everything expected of it. So that concludes our flyover of the stages, and fortunately, the strained baseball analogy as well. So I'll make a few high-level points about the other parts of the charge and then ask you for your comments. Next slide, please. So one of our charges was about expansion. One of the things that's become apparent to us is that each of these charges requires a fairly complex dynamic to reconcile often conflicting goals of the stakeholders. The benefits of interoperability are not shared equally, and nor are the costs. it's a delicate balance, and we'll try to dissect that in the next few weeks. There will likely have to be regulatory body oversight to push this process forward. And the main difference between our recommendation and the USCDI draft is that we see expansion as being driven by the pace at which data classes can complete this process rather than by some predetermined timeline. We expect that some of the draft data classes will move through these stages faster than others. Next slide, please. Frequency of publication. We like the idea of an annual publication of the data classes that have achieved stages 3 to 5. You know, coordinated really with the ISA, and also periodic announcements as a data class reaches the next USCDI stage. As the NCVHS comment letter that we just received stated, it may take a while before industry can settle into a yearly rhythm of updates, but we should probably start. It's not likely that there will be a high volume in the first year, but it could ramp up fairly quickly. And finally, the last slide, please. Process stakeholder feedback. We believe that public comment is critical at as many stages as possible, details to be completed. So over the next month, the task force is going to focus on an objective process to estimate cost and value, to combine proposed data elements into data classes with the broadest possible value, and to accelerate data classes through these stages as quickly as possible. I'm sure we'll also touch on potential roles for ONC beyond that of convener. So, Christina, do you have something to add before responding to comments?
Oh, thanks, Terry, for the concise yet very informative overview of the work that the task force has done to date. I'd say let's go ahead and open it up for comments from the committee so we can get closer to our grand plan.
So we do, this is Laura, and we have about 10 minutes or so for any questions or comments of the USCDI task force team. If there are no initial thoughts or questions, you can always send something offline, shoot an email to either Christina or Terry. And I see Denise, do you have a comment?
Yes, because we as a TEF task force talked about the intersection between what the recommendations we're making in for the TEF with the USCDI, I mean, I think it's really important, you know, as we were going over stage one, the proposed status for this USCDI process, that I think the relevance or the alignment to the permitted purposes and uses that are in the TEF, you know, has to be an important criteria. So there's got to be a balancing between the TEF and the USCDI because they really work hand in hand, I guess is what I'm trying to say. That's my comment. Thank you.
This is Terry. If I could respond to that, you know, it's absolutely essential, and it just occurred to me, having read the TEF comments, that I'm wondering if we might propose sort of shared use cases as sort of the initial trial balloons. If we can get a data class that's really ready to roll, and use that as a test case for testing the interoperability. Just a thought.
Okay, I see Denny and then Leslie.
Yes, this is Denny. I just wondered if the committee was planning to take the currently proposed data elements in the USCDI and sort of pilot them through this process of assessing their value and see how they all come out. A thought.
This is Christina. We did an exercise with the task force that each of our members took a data class and went through kind of a high-level process. We have not gone through each of the data classes in the USCDI. I think we've viewed them as already existing, so it hasn't been on our charge to actually take a look at those specific data classes. Gary, would you add to that comment at all?
Yeah, I think that's fair. We focus mostly on the process, but I think in the next 4 weeks, that's a very useful exercise to see to sort of take these through the process and see where they all end up. I think some of them are going to end up, you know, ready to be candidates, and others are going to need a little bit more work to get in process.
Okay, Leslie?
Yeah, so just to follow up on that question, does the task force, how long does the task force think it'll take to get a set of fundamental recommendations to stage four in this framework?
We've really designed the framework so that there's no set timeline to actually get to USCDI. I think we're looking at aligning it, as we have said, we said in the expansion process with the ISA, and looking at how we align with the TEF, but it really is dependent on the data classes progressing through the categories or stages that we've defined, and it's not necessarily a set number that will make it to the USCDI on any regular basis. It's as ready.
And I think I can see a slide in next month's presentation that lays that out.
Okay, seeing no other comments. Oh, sorry, Aaron?
Yep, sorry, this is Aaron Mary. Just a quick question for you. And I echo the comments about the importance here of interlacing this work with the TEFCA work that we're doing. Question for you. On stage five of the USCDI, is slide 10 of the presentation, there's a comment in there that, you know, of course, the QHINs and participants are required to update their technology. You know, one of the comments, and I don't want to jump ahead to the TEF discussion, that we always talked about was basically the cost of doing business and the cost of decision points of what it would take for, in this case, QHINs or others, to update respective technology or providers to update their technology. Well, what are the criteria in an upcoming presentation on USCDI? Start looking at that and coming up with a rubric, per se, of what the cost would be to discuss a potential class and including that, because, again, the cost of interlacing some of this could be quite high depending on the technology stack and whatnot.
This is Christina. Aaron, that's an excellent point and something that's actually come up a lot within our task force calls. It's part of that net value that Terry was discussing earlier, and we're hoping to get into a little more detail, but the cost and just the level of effort of getting the QHINs to be able to support the data classes is very high on our criteria of what needs to be evaluated.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other comments or questions at this time, Terry and Christina, I want to thank you for your work so far. Looks like we will be hearing a lot more from this team next month about this time. And at this time, I will turn it over to Robert Waugh to just provide some high-level framing for the process before we dive into the Trust Exchange Framework recommendations. We will also hear from Arian and Denise for additional context, and then they will guide us through the discussion. So I will turn it over to Robert. Are you on the line, Robert?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can now, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Lauren. And let me just start by saying thank you to Carolyn, my co-chair, who has stepped up as I have had more connection difficulties than I expected for the last meeting and for this one as well. I'm currently overseas, and getting connected into this website and the phone simultaneously has been more of a challenge than I expected. But anyway, thank you again for that introduction, Lauren. When we discussed this next section, we thought it would be good to just give a little background on how we plan to handle these large volume of recommendations that are before you from the task force. And also want to thank the task force for their extremely rapid evolving of these recommendations. It's a lot of work, and I think everybody recognizes that, but I wanted to acknowledge it again, as has been already stated. The way we thought we would do this is we've grouped it into five areas. There's an overarching set of recommendations, and then there are subgroupings, I think four subgroupings of recommendations below that. And we thought for efficiency, what we would do is use those five groupings to review the recommendations from the task force. And when we complete these discussions, then we will have a vote on the entire set of recommendations. And so as we go through the groupings, if you have specific comments about one of the recommendations within the grouping, it would be appropriate to then bring that up. We will allow one last final chance if somebody has a specific comment about a specific recommendation after we've heard all five groups. We'll entertain that as well, but our ultimate goal would be to then vote as a on the entire group of recommendations rather than take each individual recommendation for voting. I hope that is clear to everybody, but we thought that would be the most time-efficient way to do this and yet allow us to have a good discussion about the entire group of recommendations. But when we have this large number of recommendations, we thought it would be more effective and efficient to go through them as bundles. So if nobody has any comments about that, I will turn it over to Arian to then start the discussion, again, first with the overarching and then into the four subgroups. Arian?
Hello, this is Denise, and I'm going to get us started on this. Arian and I have split duties on leading this presentation, and so I want to thank our task force. We had 16 members. I don't have a slide for that. In fact, if we could go to the next slide, please. And we have been very busy over the last 4 weeks. I believe we've had about 8 meetings and 10 and a half hours in session together, as well as a lot of work behind the scenes. And I especially want to thank my fellow co-chair, Arian, because he did a lion's share of the work on the drafting for us. We are going to go over the five groupings that that we worked on to address the overarching charge that was given to us as a task force to develop and advance recommendations on Part A and B of the test. Our detailed charge included four areas: the recognized coordinating entity and eligibility requirements, the definition and requirements of qualified HINs, and making further clarifying recommendations on eligibility requirements, permitted uses and disclosures and feedback that we had as a task force and further recommendations, and then finally, privacy and security. We did, as a task force, have quite a bit of discussion that resulted in overarching comments and recommendations on the TEF, and these overarching comments and recommendations, Arian will be going over, that are around three particular areas concerning clarity of goals, division of responsibilities, and discussion on the single on-ramp. And so Arian and I will be tag-teaming, and he's going to start off with the overarching comments.
Thank you.
And recommendations.
Yep. Before I begin, I had an event yesterday that reminded me why the this task force and the TEF charge exists. and you know, this incident yesterday has informed is the kind of incident that has informed many of our work to improve interoperability nationwide. But my son has a genetic disorder that causes, among other things, seizures. He was going for a walk and had a seizure, fell, and banged up his knee and his face pretty badly. So we ended up going to the urgent care clinic to have his knee x-rayed to see if he required more substantive follow-up. And in that process, his complete medical record and his complete medication record exists in our local children's hospital. Both the children's hospital and the urgent care clinic have an EHR that's a meaningful use certified EHR. And yet we were forced to go through the laborious process of explaining his complex medication history. And quite obviously, this is a fairly inefficient state of an unsafe state of affairs. We can achieve much lower cost, higher quality care if the digital health infrastructure that we've created is able to exchange information as a matter of course. So with that, let's go to the next slide. As Denise noted, in our deliberations, we were asked to go through a number of questions, and in our deliberations, we also came up with a number of additional overarching comments. The recommendations letter that we sent to the full committee and should be available for in the public website shortly goes through a fair amount of detail and background for each of these recommendations. We're going to just dive into each of the overarching recommendations. So for the first one, the task force struggled a couple of times with areas where the current TEF draft dives into a fair amount of detail relating enablements for policy goals, but doesn't spend as much time describing the policy goals. And so one of our overarching recommendations amounts to, first, that the ONC in the TEF should clearly define the policy goals, expresses clear statements of outcomes ONC which wants to enable or outcomes ONC wants to prevent. In cases where ONC does go into a level of detail, they should first describe the high-level policy goals that back that level of detail. And in general, that articulation of high-level policy goals helps reviewers and helps implementers make sure that we're implementing the high-level policy goals appropriately as we work the framework through the process. So that's really the net of recommendation number one. Recommendation number two, in some cases we found that ONC was duplicating information in the TEF that existed in other areas. So, for example, there were specific discussions on hashing algorithms, key links, and the like, where appropriate pointers to NIST and other documentation would have been helpful. And our recommendation there is that in those areas where there's existing policy documentation that describes some of the detail that may be required, that ONC and the TEF should point to that policy documentation as opposed to duplicating that information in the TEF itself. In general, you'll see another one of our overarching recommendations, or actually our recommendations for the RCE, recommends that ONC change the balance of detailed recommendations in favor of having the RCE in conjunction with the QHINs work out those recommendations. So in many cases, this level of detailed recommendation, overall, we'd recommend that ONC defer to time of implementation. But in some cases, there may be some critical areas of national priority that ONC believes should be specifically described in the TEF. And in those cases where there's existing policy documentation. It's better for the TEF to point to that existing policy documentation as opposed to duplicating the information in the TEF. As I think people recognize, NIST, for example, takes their documentation through multiple cycles of revision, and those kinds of indirections help provide appropriate context and make sure that policy recommendations keep up to date with, for example, changes in cybersecurity. We're going to go to the next slide. There's obviously a lot of words on these slides. So in general, we recommend, and we pointed to the fairly successful success case, that's a little duplicative, we pointed to the success case of the functional certification for API requirements. I'm going to remind the committee that when it came time for meaningful use stage 3 and MIPS, that we knew as a policy goal that we wanted to evolve nationwide interoperability towards APIs as a matter of course. And as Dr. Rucker noted, the Blue Button 2.0 work that CMS is engaged in to make Medicare claims data available to patients through OAuth 2, OpenID Connect, and FHIR is an enablement of that work. At the time when ONC was contemplating the type of standards and certification criteria to put in to back that move towards APIs, we hadn't yet gone through the level of detailed specification for OAuth 2, OpenID Connect, and FHIR. And ONC chose to put together functional requirements for the workings of the API without defining the specifics for the standard certification behind the API. And that high-level policy goal enabled a set of public and private sector actors, including HL7 and the Argonaut Project, as well as the member organizations of the Argonaut Project, to prototype, work through standards, work through implementation guidance, drive that implementation guidance to real-world enablements, and roll out successful standards-based APIs that meant to set the functional certification requirements in the real world at a much more rapid pace than locking those API requirements into certification would have enabled. In general, we recommend in recommendation number 3 that ONC take that stance with regard to the TEF. We believe that there's a fair amount of work to go through to enable nationwide interoperability for the variety of use cases and permitted purposes described in the TEF. And that level of functional requirement and clear milestones and dates certain, provides the implementation community a good target to shoot for, a good timeline to shoot for, without overly constraining innovation or making it difficult to rapidly evolve through implementation, feedback, and practice. So that's the net of recommendation number 3. We note that there are some areas in recommendation number 4. We note there are some areas where ONC has fairly clearly in the TEF been concerned that the market may evolve in ways that are disadvantageous for certain classes of providers. So to give an example, even though this isn't stated in the TEF, and this may just be represent my interpretation of how ONC was looking in the TEF, you know, there are smaller provider organizations that may use EHRs, innovative EHRs, and there may be a level of concern that interoperability will be available mainly for large, fully integrated delivery systems and not as much towards smaller, innovative practices such as the urgent care clinic that I went to yesterday. In those cases where there are key policy goals that ONC is pointing to and concerns, rather than define specific policy enablements, we feel it would be better practice for ONC to define clear expectations expressed in terms of functional outcomes, and then define clear milestones to evaluate those expectations and reserve policy tools in order to drive the right level of action at a subsequent date. we note in both recommendation 3 and in recommendation number 4 that ONC does retain all of the policy levers sufficient to name standards, implementation guidance, and other particulars relating to those areas, and allowing the market to evolve towards a clear functional statement of policy outcomes gives the market and the market actors the best tools to do that kind of rapid evolution. But if we see market failure, if we see failure to align around an ecosystem that provides the public benefit that ONC is seeking, ONC should and can retain all of the tools necessary subsequently to define tighter and more specific recommendations and requirements. Recommendation number 5 is that ONC should work closely with the RCE and coordinate with other federal actors in areas where policy clarification or coordinated federal action are critical enablers. And we point to 2 areas here where this kind of close coordination has been incredibly helpful. One is the ongoing set of activities that ONC engages in with HHS OCR, where ONC, in conjunction with OCR, has clarified HIPAA in a number of very important areas. As a particular example, ONC's clarification with HHS OCR around the form and format requirements already existent for HIPAA allowed and clarified policy with regard to API-based access. Effectively, what OCR did was name standards-based API-based access a format that is readily deliverable to patients, and based on already existing HIPAA guidance associated with readily available forms and formats, there's a sufficient policy enablement for patients to use the apps of their choice in order to connect to those APIs. That kind of work, particularly as we extend the permitted purposes under the TEF into areas such as payment, healthcare operations for quality improvement, and the like, that level of close coordination with ONC and OCR will help clarify a number of policy requirements. Likewise, ONC collaboration with CMS relating to close connection of the TEF and ACO and other kinds of value-based care activities will be very helpful. And finally, in the area of federal coordination, as we see DOD, VA, IHS, and SSA engage, among other federal actors, engage in the TEF, harmonization of standards, particularly relating to privacy and security, is incredibly helpful. A number of task force members noted that in some cases, we try to drive commercially appropriate standards for privacy and security up to the level of federal actors. And while it's important in the overall healthcare ecosystem to improve the level of privacy and security enablement, in some cases we drive literally the requirements in that area up to the level that's required for example, nuclear safety. And it may be more appropriate to encourage federal actors to acknowledge that, for example, veterans and service members engage in care both in the community as well as in federal settings, and make sure that we have a privacy and security policy framework that's harmonized across both of those settings and moves as much towards the raising the bar of the commercial settings as it does also towards harmonizing federal standards with those commercial settings and make sure that we're not driving everything towards literally nuclear safety standards. Do we have one more set of overarching recommendations? We can go to the next slide.
Single
on-ramp. Okay, this is a fun one. So the task force found that the term single on-ramp that was used multiple times in the TEF caused a fair amount of confusion. The term single on-ramp was used fairly aspirationally But the enablement in the TEF is primarily around query-based exchange, in particular to brokered query-based exchange. And a number of task force members who were looking for the TEF to address specific concerns relating to public health, for example, patient-generated health data, and other key areas of national policy, felt that the single on-ramp underlined in the TEF should also be for push-based exchange that is necessary for public health, for example, in the area of reportable labs or in reportable diseases, as well as in bilateral or coordinated push transactions that might be necessary for coordinated referral transactions. Other members felt that the TEF had appropriately defined the term single on-ramp relative to query-based exchange because under the belief that there is a fairly complicated set of work that we're going to be going through in order to drive universal adoption of query-based exchange, and it's appropriate to focus there. So we characterize this as narrow focus versus broad focus. In general, our recommendation is that ONC should clearly define the role of the QHINs, as well as the RCE, relative to existing forms of exchange, and narrow the scope of what's defined as a single on-ramp with respect to the types and capabilities of exchange anticipated. Beyond that recommendation, we were not able to achieve unanimity. In fact, we were fairly evenly split between the narrow focus and broad focus goals. And so we articulated a set of possibilities for ONC to contemplate without recommending either one, and noting that the task force was effectively 50-50 split between narrow focus and broad focus. So if we go to the next slide, narrow focus would ask the ONC to clearly define the floor capability for the on-ramp provided by QHINs to be for query-based exchange and access to EHI. In all of these cases where there's some subset of needs contemplated under the TEF, we also want to make it clear that QHINs may provide, that this is a floor and the QHINs may provide more forms of exchange, and that evolving towards a true single on-ramp may be a useful policy goal. So we don't want to imply or have policy constraints that prohibit QHINs from offering additional services or from EHRs to connecting to QHINs to offer a broad range of services. We also noted that, as I said, 50% of the task force aligned around one of what we're calling 7B and 7C. Even though there is some level of alignment towards 7B versus 7C, we don't want this to be taken to look at a plurality for 7A relative to 7B. The distinction between 7B is 7B really defines the term single on-ramp holistically relative to all forms of exchange, really wanting to establish a true single on-ramp for multiple forms of exchange, whereas 7C really aligns around a single on-ramp that is specific to national priority goals over the next three-year period. That's an important distinction, by the way. The task force noted that although aspirationally we might want to get to a single on-ramp, even for the folks who advocated for a narrow focus, the real discussion of the task force was over the three-year period for evaluation in the RCE established by ONC. And so all of these recommendations should be taken with respect to a three-year period. So I believe that is the last of our overarching recommendations. Can we go on to the next slide?
You have one more.
One more, great.
We have three.
So
thank
you.
Depending on what we chose, seven.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if we choose a broad and expansive definition of, or a broad definition of single on-ramp, we also recommend that the ONC work with the RCE to establish standards and capabilities for push-based transactions, in particular for public health exchange, for coordinated referrals, and for supply of patient data, patient PGHD into EHRs. So now that does actually conclude the first 8 recommendations, the first 8 of, I believe, 26 recommendations that we're offering under this recommendation letter, and concludes our discussion of the overarching recommendations. So just to give a summary of our overarching recommendations, number one is more specificity, in general, more specificity around policy goals, an approach that ONC adopts to define policy goals and milestones and dates certain for achievement of those policy goals, while letting the actors involved in information exchange work out the details, and better definition, better coordination with federal actors, and better definition of the term single on-ramp. So at that, Robert, maybe we turn it back over to you to allow the committee to deliberate the overarching recommendations.
Thanks, Arian and Denise, both. So you can see the challenge that we have with a large number of recommendations, and we appreciate the task force's work here and the chairs in trying to get this in a way in which we can manage our comments. I also want to comment that the other challenge we have is to run the committee meeting, and because we have a large public audience as well, and there's various modalities in which the public will have an opportunity to comment on our work, I want to make sure I clarify our process for that. So your chairs have planned that we would allow the task force chairs to give a summary of each of these bundles of recommendations as a prelude to the discussion by the committee on each bundle of recommendations. There is time scheduled at the end of our discussions as a committee for public comment, and so I would ask the patience of the public members that are participating in the meeting to hold their comments until that section. I see that some people are making comments in the chat line, and we will try to add those back into the discussion at the appropriate time. But if I miss one or two, please, as the public, please feel free to remind me that there were those other comments. I'll also say that we are trying to time box this a little bit. As you can see on the agenda, we scheduled the bulk of the meeting for this section. But as you can imagine, this large number of recommendations will take quite a while to go through. So Lauren has volunteered to be the timekeeper on this. We will roughly try to stay to that, recognizing there may be some variability between the bundles. So some bundles may take a little longer to discuss than others. And so overall, we would like to stay within our time that we have scheduled for the entire issue, but we'll have some flexibility within each bundle. So with that, we will open it up to the committee to comment on the bundle of overarching recommendations that Arian just presented.
Thanks, Robert. And I see Stephen, you're first in the queue with a comment.
Yeah, this is Stephen Lane. I just wanted to go on record as really giving great appreciation to the group that has developed these recommendations. This clearly was a lot of work, and they're very clear, and I just wanted to thank you for that. I also wanted to say that under Recommendation 6, I think it's very helpful to call out that differentiation between the narrow focus, which I think was reflected in the draft TEF, and the broader focus, which I know that I raised during our first meeting discussion of this, and I think attempting to look at this holistically with the broad focus is really going to benefit us in the long term, even though it does mean a bit more work up front.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions on the overarching recommendations?
Our general theory is to overwhelm the committee with words.
Arian, I see you have a comment.
Yes, I do. This is Arian Miri. First of all, I appreciate everybody on the committee that served together to pull this together. This is a fantastic body of work done in a very short time period, and I've served on other back as before, that it had a much longer runway. So I appreciate everybody and their diligence on this. And great job, Arian and Denise, pulling this together. So sort of a comment I want to stress and really focus on, especially around recommendation 5 with the information security, privacy, and identity assurance. I think we talked about it enough as a task force, but I want to stress as a larger group that harmonizing and making sure that we point towards understood, such as NIST or other guidelines, is critical. And I think all of us came from different perspectives of our career and our experiences where one group was speaking English, one group was speaking Greek, and the two couldn't talk. So making sure that we all align and making sure that we continue to stress leveraging those generally accepted criteria and frameworks is critically important. Those are my comments.
Thank you. Christina, you're next.
Thank you. I would like to echo that this is a great presentation. Thank you so much. And I was thinking of the USCDI under recommendation 3 and the fact that you guys had recommended that there should be a refrain from naming particular standards. One thing under recommendation 3 that we could do is possibly point to the interoperability standards advisory and the USCDI to address this area as well for the more specifics.
I want to point out that later in our recommendations relating to permitted uses and disclosures, we recommend that ONC and the RCE elaborate the USCDI with regard to the priorities established for each of the permitted purposes. So I think pointing at the ISA as well as the USCDI, I think is an important call out.
Thanks, Arian. Go ahead, Christina.
Hi.
Nope, go ahead. Terry's probably going to say what I'm going to say.
I think I see Ken next in the queue.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for the really detailed recommendations. Could you comment a little bit on, and sorry if I missed it, on the balance between doing the wide-based search and the inevitable probably misidentification of someone else's record that's going to happen and how that's being considered?
So is this with regard to query-based exchange over the QHINs and the possibility of
false? Yeah, just the notion that if you're searching throughout the whole nation, if you don't have a name like mine, which there still might be, but if you had a fairly usual name, et cetera, like there's a decent chance that the algorithm will pick you up someone else's record and pull it in.
Yeah, so the committee did not consider that particular item. There is the possibility of in any form of health information exchange, the possibility of accidental disclosure of information. In general, the HIPAA does accommodate for accidental or incidental notifications, particularly in cases where the person to whom the information was disclosed follows appropriate procedures regarding data deletion. And there's specific notice in HIPAA regarding, or specific language in HIPAA regarding the responsibility, or in some cases the ability to address that throughout without going through a breach notification process. There are areas where, and again, this is probably secondary to our recommendation of ONC and OCR collaboration. There are areas that I think would be helpful to for ONC and OCR to work out regarding, for example, looking up a patient's information in an index and getting the wrong patient prior to actually pulling down the patient's information, where I believe that falls under the incidental disclosure language in HIPAA, but it's not explicitly a permitted purpose either. Just as a reminder, the permitted purpose, for example, for treatment requires that you are actually treating the patient. In this case, you're looking up the wrong patient's information. So, you know, establishing some level of policy guidance regarding these kinds of inevitable incidental disclosures, I think would be very helpful for the community. But I do think that is sort of secondary to our overall requirement that ONC work with OCR to work out many of the policy details.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think beyond the disclosure, just if you could think through like how to minimize the chances that somebody will trust the information that gets pulled in and make a decision that leads to patient harm, which I'm going to just venture and guess it will happen and someone will get harmed, someone might die, but being explicit about, but maybe in the overall scheme of things, the benefits from all the number of people who will get better care, who will prevent, you know, adverse events is worth it. But I think being a little bit, acknowledging of the fact that there will be harm that comes from accidental data handling and providers just trusting the information, I think it would be useful to think through how to really minimize that that cost or to try to have mechanisms to prevent it. Like, so the notion that when you're looking at the data, it's more obvious when it may be, for example, you know, it could be as simple as you're talking to the patient, say, "Hi, see data that came from these particular health systems. Have you received care at all of them?" kind of thing. But anyway, it just seems like it's inevitable something will happen,
yeah.
And if we're not careful about it.
So in general, our recommendations do address those areas, but recommend that the RCE and the QHINs work out the details locally. With regard to some of the broad national priorities, we definitely do recommend that ONC work with OCR, particularly to work out some of the issues relating to breach. I think relating to liability, I'm not sure that ONC or OCR could appropriately address liability concerns relating to information exchange. But you know, it might be possible to contemplate some language that we might want to put into the recommendations. In general, I feel somewhat uncomfortable making specific recommendations in this area because the task force wasn't asked to and didn't explicitly address that particular concern.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Maybe just for the ONC folks. I think the benefits definitely outweigh the costs, but there will be costs, so mitigating it as much as possible would be great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken and Arian. So we'll try to take one more comment from Terry, and I think we'll need to move on to the RCE portion of the recommendations. Terry?
Yeah, thanks again. And great job hacking your way through a really thick jungle. It's some great clarity here. One of the ways, just following up on the last comment, we might want to think about a data class that specifically addresses unique individual identification as sort of the priority to run through the USCDI process. It seems to me to be sort of a fundamental cog in this whole machine. And would appreciate any thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was pointing at. In that, there is in HIPAA. It's one of the odd areas in HIPAA where HIPAA allows data to be used for treatment if it is in fact the same patient. But there's no explicit handling in the HIPAA regs for looking up patient demographic information and selecting the right patient. Except insofar as there is specific language in HIPAA relating to these kinds of incidental and non-harmful disclosures. So it would be really helpful for OCR and ONC to help clarify the process in looking up a demographic index, the demographics of patients to find the right patient to minimize some of the downstream risk of disclosure and risk of harm.
Okay. Ken, if I can come back to your comment, or do you still have your hand raised from previously?
No, you can come back.
Great. So I think I'm going to hand it over to Denise now for the RCE.
Great. Thank you. In the area of the recognized coordinating entity, we are advancing three recommendations on the RCE, which address particular eligibility requirements for the RCE and how the ONC should judge the success or failure of the RCE and what milestones might be considered. So to summarize on recommendation 9 and 10, I'll first note that just as we talked about in the overarching recommendations, that the task force believed that ONC should assign a number of the operating decisions and a lot of the detailed guidance for overall architecture and orchestration and standards, et cetera, to the RCE, working in conjunction with the QHIN. And then given that, obviously the RCE should have strong capabilities in healthcare interoperability. We believe that the RCE should be broadly trusted, be above reproach, transparent, and open, that the governance should represent a broad range of perspectives, and that it not be overly weighted to any particular group, such as large health systems, federal providers, a particular QHIN, et cetera, and should have sufficient protections against activities that might lead to or be perceived as leading to conflicts of interest. We also acknowledge that the RCE role might not match exactly any of the existing interoperability governance actors, and that the RCE selected by ONC might represent a merged or reconfigured version of one or more established actors. And we also suggest that ONC may wish to look at successful governance models from outside of healthcare, such as the NTSB or the national labs. So that summarizes recommendations 9 and 10. And if we can go to the next slide for recommendation 11. We did discuss how ONC should judge the success or failure of the RCE and what milestones might be considered. And generally speaking, we felt that the RCE should be judged primarily based on outcome-based measures. For example, those set forth in the impact domain and subdomains of the National Quality Forum's interoperability measurement framework and then actual real-world success of interoperability. We noted that this is a voluntary framework and that the TEF and the RCE will really be judged based on how successful this is for providers and patients to adopt and receive services through the QHIN that address the policy goals that are in the 21st Century Cures Act. Some secondary measures that we thought should be satisfied were around satisfaction or survey-based measures, measuring the perceptions of the user experience with interoperability, primarily of patients and providers, and secondarily of health IT developers and QHINs. And that's basically summarized recommendation 11. So I think I'm catching us up on some time here. Those are the three recommendations that the task force had on the RCE eligibility criteria. I'll turn it over for comments now for this grouping. To Robert. I think, Robert, you're handling
thank,
that.
Thank you, Denise.
Yep.
And we'll, I think we have Lauren keeping track of the hands raised. So.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't see any hand raised at this time. Do we have any comments or questions or thoughts for recommendations 9 through 11?
Not as a controversial topic, I don't think.
That's why I said I think there's going to be some variation across the bundles, but we want to make sure that we have it.
A little more straightforward, I think.
Yeah. But at the same time, we want to make sure we have an opportunity for all the recommendations to have an opportunity to be fully discussed. I think the best outcome is when we have every perspective possible expressed on this, but we want to do it in a time-efficient way as well.
Yep, and we can always come back at the end, as you mentioned, but I do see one comment from Aaron so far.
Yep, Aaron Mary here. So quick comment, I want to maybe add a little bit more coloring to recommendation 11. You know, the task force, we did spend quite some time just throwing around use cases and ideas of specific measurements. I think that I do want to stress that's very important for there to be very clear and defined measurement on success criteria for the RCE. A case in point, it could even lead towards the earlier question on this call about did we accurately identify the people accessing or traversing the system? Did the RCE do their job effectively in identifying folks? That could be a measurement criteria just as a brainstorm. Those types of things can help really alleviate any concerns or help mitigate any of those risks that were brought up earlier. So I just want to point that out, that recommendation 11 can really be meaty and really help prove the meat in the sauce.
Aaron, thank you for providing that example. That's a really good one.
And Tina, I see you have a comment.
Yes, so I think recommendation 11 is fantastic, and I applaud the group for identifying the need to ensure that we are quantitatively sort of measuring success. And this may come later, but the comment I would have is that there should be some thought or some discussion around how will those measurements be used to assess performance, sort of both at the OMC level. I agree with the process metrics for an RCE so that they're clear that they need to measure their performance. But I guess just one step further in terms of how will that be used to assess sort of the election of the RCE, if you will, and how we will use that or how will that be used to ensure that outcomes are being achieved.
Thank you, Tina. Seeing no other comments at this time, Denise and Arian, are we okay to proceed to the QHIN portion of the recommendations?
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. So for the QHIN section, number one, there was, just for people who are following along at home, there was a definition of participant neutrality that was stated in the definition of a QHIN, literally in the definition section. And the task force spent a fair amount of time discussing the language and the enablement for participant neutrality. And consistent with the rest of our recommendations, we recommend that ONC clarify the policy intent relating to the specific definition of participant neutral. We generally recommend that ONC define a policy goal that the overall ecosystem of QHINs is neutral and accessible to all parties, but that ONC should use more neutral definitions that do not prevent data holders from offering QHIN services. So the specific detailed definition of participant neutral was defined as prohibiting a QHIN from serving data relating to itself. We felt that there would be a number of potential QHIN actors who are also potential data holders, and that defining the QHIN in that way could potentially limit the number of or types of organizations that might want to offer services. We also noted that in many cases, some of the surmised concerns that ONC was trying to mitigate actually could be fairly trivially stepped aside based on that particular definition, in that, for example, some of the information exchanges offered in conjunction with vertically integrated health information technology systems are in fact run by not-for-profit organizations that are run by the providers who use a particular information technology system and are not run by the information technology vendor themselves. So we would, if ONC has a particular concern relating to the participant neutral language, ONC might consider the various ways the prospective QHINs might structure their activities to address those possible restrictions. So that's the intent of recommendation number 12. We had a lot of discussion relating to the broker model, and this is in general following our general recommendation that ONC establish the policy what. and allow the RC and QHINs to work out the details of the technology enablement how. So if we go to the next page, ONC should define a set of functional requirements documenting the outcomes of using a QHIN from the perspective of a provider or patient. For example, ONC might define a functional requirement that a provider or patient should receive all known locations where a patient's data might be found and the content of data to be found at those locations, regardless of technology vendor or QHIN used by the end location of data. So that's a proposed, and again, a proposed functional definition of the broker language that addresses or sidesteps some of the particulars in how the broker might be constituted or some of the details associated with the activities of the broker. That definition would allow for multiple configurations of a model for achieving the outcome. So, for example, one could cache or remember locations across multiple invocations or have QHINs that share data on location between themselves in the same way that, for example, the DNS system does. But again, the general recommendation is rather than define the specific functions of a broker model, define the policy requirements for what should happen and let the RC and QHINs work out the how. There's a fair background in the document relating to QHIN fees. Some of the background for the fee structure discussions is that the task force discussed the notion of either free or cost basis fee structures for QHIN to QHIN exchanges, combined with the TEF language that is establishes a duty to respond for permitted purposes and some consequence for unintended some risk of unintended consequences for that activity. So, for example, there are a number of business cases that drive interoperability needs. As one example that's quite public and well established, SSA finds that electronic adjudication of disability determination is much cheaper and more effective for taxpayers than retrieval of paper-based charts, chart abstraction, and paper data handling relating to the information required for the disability determination. And so based on the value that SSA receives from that work, SSA is in fact willing to pay for electronic retrieval of information associated with a disability determination. And I believe the fee structure is $15 a chart or $15 a disability determination. These kinds of business models provide an effective business model for information exchange, both from the provider and from the qualified information networks that serve them. Based on the TEF language for duty to respond and the QHIN to QHIN fee structure, we noted that, for example, a federal QHIN, a QHIN that served federal actors that made a disability determination request based on the TEF language would both, based on the duty to respond, require actors to submit data, and also based on the TEF in this case, zero-cost QHIN to QHIN exchange have no additional fee structure charged from the federal QHIN to or from the QHIN that was doing the response. And what effectively that does is it makes SSA's fees in that case effectively optional in the sense that we've forced duty to respond and driven the cost down to a $0 cost basis. So in those areas, the task force was concerned that we're essentially undermining the business case for exchange and undermining a variety of potential use cases for exchange where the benefit should be associated or could be associated with the fee structure that might drive more optimal configurations of value. So we go to the next slide. Number one is ONC should establish through the TEF the combination of zero or cost basis QHIN to QHIN fee requirements with the duty to respond by QHINs. Participants and end users only on QHIN intermediate access that's required by respond by QHINs. Participants and end users only on QHIN intermediate access is required by all participants and end users and for uses that are reciprocal where both sides of the exchange benefit and participate. ONC should understand that zero or cost basis QHIN to QHIN fee structures combined with duty to respond for permitted purposes will significantly shape market dynamics and increase the incentives for organizations to opt out of participation in the TEF. So just a gloss on that last clause. If an organization would be effectively forced to exchange information based on the combination of zero or cost basis QHIN to QHIN fee structures and the duty to respond established under the TEF, they have an incentive actually not to participate in the TEF in the sense that they could separately contract with SSA and get a $15 per case or separately contract with a Medicare Advantage payer and get potentially a fee structure for risk adjudication or for HEDIS measurement. And all of those, the SSA pricing structure is fairly well established and enshrined in regulation and in sub-regulatory work by the SSA. The notion of a payer-based fee structure for Medicare Advantage risk adjudication or HEDIS measurement is also a well-established pricing structure in industry. So if you force duty to respond and force a cost basis or zero cost fee structure, you're effectively providing an incentive for provider organizations to opt out of QHIN intermediated exchange and TEF intermediated exchange and separately contract for exchange, which sort of undermines the case for the TEF and QHINs in general. We also noted that some of the details here are a little complicated because they're driven by ultimately what ONC and HHS determine is Congress's intent in some of the language associated with information blocking. And so this notion of duty to respond under information blocking requirements needs to closely track the duty to respond established in the TEF. And right now we weren't in a position to determine whether the duty to respond established in the TEF actually tracked the duty to respond associated with information blocking. So a pretty complex and meaty set of recommendations, and it's quite possible we'll have some comment in that area. We talked about the attributed cost calculation that's associated for fee structures, and we noted that based on the way that attributed costs are calculated, it's quite possible to undermine the incentive for improving QHIN operations over time. So some of the examples that we gave is that if I spend as a QHIN R&D dollars to improve efficiency, I actually, because I've lowered the cost basis for exchange, I don't have any means for capturing the improved efficiency that I have relative to other QHINs. And the bad actor QHIN who kind of does their activities cheap and dirty and doesn't spend as much R&D, in fact, because their cost structure is higher, has no incentive to reduce their cost structure over time. And so you've effectively got a mechanism that drives QHIN exchange to the highest rather than the lowest cost structure. So on the next slide, we recommend that ONC provide the RCE the authority to employ mechanisms to ensure QHIN to QHIN fees are uniform for like services at like performance SLAs. So here, basically, you would establish, for example, for treatment-based use cases with a particular SLA. So for example, 5 seconds to pull a case for treatment. You'd establish a common fee structure. And that common fee structure would provide incentives for QHINs over time to improve performance and improve operations so that they can effectively beat that cost structure and reap the benefits from beating that cost structure. We also noted in the second clause, the second part of the recommendations, that the RC should adopt mechanisms, and we point, for example, to reverse auctions as a possible mechanism, that we don't want to overly constrain what mechanisms are adopted, that prevent against inappropriate price increases and provide appropriate incentives for QHINs to reduce cost structure for QHIN to QHIN exchange over time. So, for example, these kinds of reverse auction structures have been used by the FTC relating to bandwidth auctions. And the basic notion is you bid out a QHIN to QHIN fee structure, and you pick a mechanism to pick a QHIN to QHIN fee structure. And if all the QHINs improve their performance and you rebid, you're actually driving the cost for QHIN to QHIN fee structures down over time, while providing incentives for QHINs to beat that structure and improve profitability. We also noted that the presence of zero-based QHIN to QHIN fee structures decrease incentives on participants and end users to develop and use those services efficiently. So as a note, the public health, the SSA or other disability determination or benefits determination use cases, as well as individual access use cases, were noted at a zero-based fee structure, and our recommendation is to reserve the zero-based QHIN to QHIN fee structure solely for true individual access. And when we get down to permitted uses and disclosures, we make additional comments related to individual access. Do we have another recommendation under Qualified Health Information Networks?
No, that was our last.
Let's go back up. So those are our recommendations relating to our charge for Qualified Information Health Information Networks. And we'll turn it back to Robert for discussion.
Thank you, Arian. Again, another bundle that we've been presented. Open the floor for the committee to comment and respond.
And I see Ken, you have a comment?
Yeah, hi. I found the recommendations for what can the U.S. I guess it's here and later on as well, U.S. Core data set group include, were there anything in this set of work where you found there was any particular recommendations for the other work group here in this set of recommendations?
We do in the permitted uses and disclosures make recommendations for tracking USCDI relative to the specific use cases associated with permitted uses and disclosures. So when we get to that section, you'll see that recommendation.
Yeah, we have something very specific on that.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions?
While we're waiting for people to raise their hand, I just wanted to take a moment to say, in the public comment area of the application we're using, I've noted that there are good comments, and we appreciate that, and I want to encourage people to use that. I think I also want to make sure that people know that the public comments that are put in the chat line do become part of the public record of this meeting, and so some of the comments are questions, and some of the comments are just not just, but some comments consist of questions and some consist of comments. And I wanted all the people that are putting those in the chat section that they will be included in the record of this meeting. For purposes of making this whole meeting work right, I think it would be best, if possible, if you have a question or something that you would like feedback on directly from the task force chairs, to use the public comment period at the end of the meeting to use that period to forward that question. If you have a comment that you want to add to the record, you can do so in the chat area of the application. But I just wanted to clarify that for the people that are using the chat area. That's how we plan to use that input source.
Robert, this is Denise. Can I make a point of order?
Sure.
I just want to make sure that all the committee members, if if you have comments and questions, it is best if you verbalize those, because we are going to take a vote at the end of this, and if there's some concern a committee member has or some suggested revision that they think needs to be made before they're willing to vote favorably on the recommendations, that it would be best if that is brought up verbally rather than in the chat.
Yes, thank you, Denise. That's absolutely right. For the committee members, you know, this is our opportunity to have a full discussion of the recommendations that are being put forward by your task force. As you know, our process is that we expect the task force to take the deep dive into these issues, but ultimately it is the committee's work to then approve the recommendations that come from the task force. And so this is our opportunity as a committee to fully air our questions, comments, and issues about those things that the task force has put before us. So, I'll echo Denise's comment that this is our time to fully discuss these recommendations and to remind the committee that our plan is at the end of discussing these five areas or bundles, we will plan to have a vote on the entire set of recommendations from the task force.
All right, so one last call for comments or questions from this last bunch of recommendations before we move on to permitted uses and disclosures. And perhaps the lack of comments are a testament to the good work of the task force. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it back to Denise for the next bunch, correct?
All right, thank you. This next grouping has several recommendations, and I'll ask my fellow co-chair to please not feel remiss to jump in if I fail to emphasize something I should, because this gets into some pretty deep areas. So this next grouping is around the permitted uses and disclosures and the actual exchange modality use cases, specifically broadcast query, targeted query, and population-based query. So ONC did ask us to provide feedback and recommendations on these areas, and we have, as a task force, 8 recommendations to advance here. The first 3 recommendations are around the individual access permitted purpose. And then there is a recommendation around permitted uses and disclosures that are beyond individual access and treatment. We have a general recommendation around the alignment of USCDI with these permitted purposes and use cases. A recommendation which I believe Arian sufficiently went into previously on the discussion of QHINs related to the fee structure for SSA disability determination. And then we have a recommendation related to payment permitted purpose and population-based query use. So let me see if I can step through this and provide you summary to these groupings within this category. And I will note that on the slides that there is a bit of the summary of our discussion in preamble that is not actually part of the specific recommendation. So starting with the first 3 recommendations around individual access, as a task force, we strongly endorse the requirement for individual access. But we also noted that this is an emerging space, and in a lot of cases, policies and standards requirements are not clearly established. And we do believe that individual access, as defined in HIPAA, needs to be cleanly separated, where it's individual access through an individually controllable account, needs to be cleanly separated and clarified from aggregator-based access, which would be done, as a secondary purpose via a proxy through an individual access request, particularly as it as it relates to fee restrictions and duty to respond. So the first recommendation is around ONC clearly defining individual access consistent with HIPAA, as I noted, and making that differentiation between aggregator-based access, and that fee restrictions and duty to respond should be restricted to the case where the patient is requesting access to view, download, use, or transmit data to an entity or application or utility that the patient manages. And also that subsequent data donation should be optional and under the patient's control, that the patient itself does not have, through flow-down requirements, a duty to respond. The second recommendation is around that to make it clear that the duty to respond is an obligation of other participants and end users, not an obligation of individuals. But that does not preclude the patient who has control of their data to make their data available if they so chose to. Recommendation 19 discusses that ONC should ensure that stakeholders, and we're talking about like the RCE and standards development organizations and so forth, test and evolve standards and guidance and profiles and accompanying policy that's sufficient to enable broad-scale individual access. Because as we noted earlier, there is not a lot of policy and standards requirements that are clearly established for this permitted purpose. All right, so those are the three recommendations around the individual access permitted purpose. Okay. On the next recommendation, the task force endorses the requirement for treatment-based access and acknowledges that it's a well-tested area and has many examples that are working well in practice. But we did note that there's other permitted uses and disclosures that have only had pilot-based use or use through a proprietary exchange model. And we do believe that these uses beyond treatment require some active production testing and refinement prior to broad-scale use. And so that's the nature of our recommendation 20, that while there is a lot of broad-scale testing and production use for treatment purposes, that these other purposes aren't necessarily at the same level of maturity. But we would not want to preclude the QHIN, the HIN, or the participant from enabling the other permitted uses. Hopefully I got that right, Arian. Like I said, chime in. Okay. Recommendation 21. Let's see, what slide are we on? I apologize, my computer screen just went blank, but we should be, we can stay on slide number 16. That's the preamble to our next recommendation, recommendation 21. There was a lot of discussion around the fact that in order to enable some of the use cases for these permitted purposes, that there needed to be maturity around the standards and for the data model, and that the USCDI, while it's outside our scope and charter for our task force, we did note that what is occurring in the USCDI had to evolve in close coordination and collaboration with what's required in the TEF in terms of duty to respond for permitted uses and disclosures. And we did note as a task force that in some cases that the data classes are not yet available or not complete. So, for instance, for the Social Security Administration Disability Determination use case, there are data elements that they need that are beyond the class of data that's available in the US CDI. And then we also noted in other cases, due to the minimum necessary requirements in terms of providing data. So for instance, public health has the authority to have data, certain classes of data. There are some data classes that provide a lot more than what they're permitted to have. And so thus we advanced this recommendation that ONC work closely with the stakeholders to align USCDI to the particular needs of each permitted purpose, both to address additional data needed and to minimize data provided for the particular use case as the law permits. Recommendation 22, I believe Arian has sufficiently covered that earlier, but this relates to the fee structure and the potential for fee disparities, and that ONC should work with stakeholders to resolve the fee disparities for the disability determination use case. We also noted here for purposes of use beyond individual access and treatment to see the our previous comments related to the QHIN fee structures for some of our concerns related to duty to respond in zero or cost basis QHIN to QHIN fee requirements. The next recommendation, recommendation 23, we're still on slide 17. We thought as a task force that the payment permitted purpose, as defined in the TEF document, was too broad to really be useful, and that payment-based uses and use cases include several types of data and scenarios, such as claims attachments, medical necessity, utilization management, as listed on the slide here. We also noted that, and this relates to recommendation 24, that with population-level queries, there are population-level queries that are related to a provider-based population-level query and a payer-based query, and that in the particular case of the payer-based query, there's a lot of complexities related to member filtering and actually matching up members with particular providers, with particular payers. And I know just from personal experience, I've seen this in the HIE when we wanted to do a patient activity report for the health plan organizations to let them know when a patient has been admitted to the hospital that's one of their members, that there's a lot of complexity in getting that all lined up, that you're not giving them information for someone that is not presently one of their members. So recommendation 23 on the next slide, slide 18, we are recommending that ONC clearly define sub-purposes of use under the broad payment permitted purpose or define the policy objectives, and that really ONC should work with the RCE to establish enablement, including working on standards and policy implementation guidance and policy guidance for each of the permitted purposes for which there is a duty to respond. Now, our last recommendation, I think it's our last one here, yes, in this area, relates to the discussion around population-based query modality or use. So for provider-based HIPAA operations, it's probably a lot clearer that, you know, an easier, or not really easy, but less complex for the provider scenario and their ability to do data aggregation across several covered entities for quality measurement or for ACO purposes. But when we get into the payer-based population query, or population-based query by other actors other than payers, that this is not necessarily ready for scale. So recommendation 24 recommends that ONC should work with the standards development organizations and the public, private stakeholders to define, test, collect, and get feedback and refine standards for population-based query for provider-oriented value-based care uses, and then should work with OCR and other stakeholders to align standards with policy requirements to ensure the standards can be used in practice. And that we are also recommending that ONC delay implementation of these use cases until appropriate testing can be performed. And that is the last recommendation under permitted uses and disclosures. And I'll turn it over to you, Robert, and Lauren to facilitate comments.
Thanks, Denise. And Lauren, I think you already have somebody with their hand up.
Yes, we do. Stephen, and then Leslie.
Yes, I just wanted to applaud the recommendation for a go-slow approach to payer-based access. We've, within our organization, heard a lot of concerns about this and a real sense that this needs to be done in a very deliberative way, as you say, with the input of groups that have put a lot of thought into this. I, again, wanted to applaud that.
Thanks, Stephen. Leslie?
The introduction to the Trusted Exchange Framework calls out specifically use of the infrastructure for research. And I've noticed that there is not a specific comment on or text in the section here on use of the network for research. Did you all discuss this, and is there any plan for a recommendation that would support the use of the network for research-related queries that are approved by human subjects and other appropriate methodologies?
I'll respond first, and then I'll let others or Erin or others on the task force jump in, but I do know around the population-based query, I believe we had talked that some of those other actors on a population-based query possibly would be research, and that a lot of that hasn't been worked out and defined. And then I think we also acknowledged that under individual access that patients are permitted to send their data to whomever or wherever they would like to, and that may facilitate the needs of research.
Yeah, I agree with both of those. I'd also note that the task force charge did not ask us to address research needs with regard to the TEF, nor was research one of the explicitly permitted purposes established in the TEF. So I think it's fair to say that it's a great point, but the task force wasn't asked and didn't do any specific deliberation in that area.
I'd just like to add that it is explicitly called out on page 3 of the TEF, where we envision the vision we seek is to achieve a system where individuals are, and goes on, and that public health agencies and researchers can rapidly learn, develop, and deliver cutting-edge treatments by having secure, appropriate access to electronic health information. So this is a charge. This is part of the introductory framework of the TEF, but it never really found its way into the authorized uses of it. And I think that it should explicitly be called out as an authorized use. Research as an authorized use of the national network.
Hi, this is Genevieve. Just one comment on that. The section that you read from the introduction is the ultimate vision of where we're heading to. In the draft, we did not suggest research as an explicit permitted purpose because we wanted to get feedback on whether the industry was ready for that. We did receive a number of comments during the public comment period on it, so we are looking through all of those right now.
Thanks, Genevieve. Any other comments or questions?
Lauren, this is Genevieve. Am I allowed to ask a question?
Absolutely.
So I just didn't know, Erin and Denise, if you guys could address when you read through Recommendation 20, it seems to indicate that the initial permitted purposes should be treatment and individual access only. However, because the rest are untested and not ready for, you know, I'm going to say, quote unquote, prime time. But then in Recommendation 21, you indicate that the SSA, in particular the benefits determination use case, is fairly well tested, and you applauded its inclusion in the permitted purposes, which seems like a perceived conflict to me between those two recommendations. And so I didn't know if you could clarify a little bit, you know, what you all are recommending as sort of the initial set of permitted purposes that would be included.
The issue there is relevant relative to the U.S. CDI, and we had an earlier draft made explicit U.S. CDI links to the SSA case, and then we decided to combine the U.S. CDI comments into an overall U.S. CDI recommendation. But the task force members noted that the permitted purpose is well established and well aligned, but that the current consolidated CDA and current U.S. CDS core clinical data set, whatever it is insufficient for the SSA use case. So that's really where the issue lies. In most cases, people who respond to the SSA disability determination do so using the SSA's CDA guide. That calls for additional information over and above the consolidated CDA.
Okay, so is the ultimate recommendation there that the benefits determination not be included as a permitted purpose because the minimum U.S. CDI requirement doesn't meet all of their needs? Is that what you guys are recommending?
So in general, we're not making recommendations about prioritizing permitted purposes. We're making more explicit recommendations that certain permitted purposes have all of the technology enablement available to go. And in other cases, we're making recommendations that there are some specifics that need to get worked out. I think in the SSA case, it's a fair summary of the task force recommendations that we'd say that the permitted purpose is worked out, the technology enablement is worked out, but that the U.S. CDI needs to be aligned make sure that the data is available for SSA.
Okay. Thanks. That was helpful clarification. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other comments or questions, and looks like we're doing pretty good on time here, how about we transition to privacy and security for our last set of recommendations?
All right. I think it's our last two recommendations. So we had a fair amount of discussion relating to the notion of individual consent or what the privacy and security Tiger team previously called meaningful choice. And the general recommendation or the general discussion is that I think there's a number of people who have been hoping for some superset of individual choice requirements that would meet or satisfy the needs of all state and localities. It was the task force's belief that there is no one universal superset of just do this and you're covered in every locality, nor is it possible for ONC or OCR to establish such a need because state law and local regulation may change. In general, we noted that the best practice in this area is to push the obligation to achieve meaningful choice down to as close as possible the patient and allow that information to flow up appropriately. So, you know, in some cases, the obligations available to meet state law or to meet local regulations or to meet institutional guidance are best addressed by the provider organizations that are registering and onboarding patients. We generally found that if you ask patients and collect meaningful choice, you tend to get about a 95% response rate, favorable, and you know a fervent 5% response rate that's unfavorable. And a number of actors noted that they started with requiring opt-in semantics and realized the administrative burden for those opt-in semantics was higher than the benefit warranted. So in general, recommendation 25 is ONC should not demand universal requirements to collect and honor individual consent for HIPAA-permitted purposes. ONC should assign requirements in this area to the RCE to address, which should consider successful implementations that allow flowing or assigning these requirements to the organizations, for example, provider organizations, that are closest to the patient and to obligations established under state and local law and regulation. That's recommendation 25. Recommendation 26 related to the request to consider specific patient matching and linking requirements, as well as patient education and rights and responsibilities, particularly for the patient application side of the HIPAA FTC legal boundary. In the discussion note for the task force, we noted that there's a fair amount of information that's available already, and that we felt that it was appropriate for ONC to provide existing background to the RC, but not otherwise constrain requirements for patient education and patient matching. I guess the summary of this is we feel like there's a lot out there. There's no magic. I think some people are looking for ONC to provide, again, the magic patient linking bullet, silver bullet that solves all patient linking problems. Our general recommendation is ONC should make all the information that it has available to the RCE, but not lock down specific requirements, either for patient education or for patient matching, as specific obligations to RCEs or to the QHINs. ONC, HHS, OCR, and other relevant actors should establish appropriate guidance and interpretive background regarding the rights of patients with respect to patient-generated health data that flows to covered entities or to other actors participating in exchange, including through the TEF and QHINs. We had a fair amount of discussion toward the end of our deliberation around some questions like, you know, what happens when a patient makes data available? It flows into a provider organization, and then what happens to it, and can it then flow through the TEF and through the QHIN? We noted that we didn't really have the time or the expertise in the committee to deliberate on all of those discussions, and those areas punted to HHS and so generally ONC and HHS OCR to address some of those. I'd note that there's been a number of really helpful reports, including the playbook, the ONC playbook, good interpretive guidance for HIPAA, both published by ONC as well as published by HHS OCR, and with regard to the obligations and issues relating to non-HIPAA covered entities, in particular to the sets of consumer applications that are covered under FTC regulation. There's been a number of really important reports and white papers that ONC's published in this area that provide helpful guidance and context in those areas. So that, I believe, covers the sum total of the 26 recommendations that we made in this recommendation letter. So maybe we go to back to you, Robert, for public for committee or task force comment. Sorry, committee comment relating to these last two recommendations, and then back to overall committee comment relating to the overall recommendations letter.
And I see we have Ken in the queue with a comment.
Great. Thank you. With regard to recommendation number 25, can you clarify a little bit how the when you say that the practices have already been defined, can you clarify that a little bit more and comment also on whether in a national sort of sense it may be difficult if different groups are using different regions are using different approaches towards making sure it's the same patient?
So when I say the practices have been defined, what we're saying here is that there is an established practice, and we see this, for example, in e-prescribing networks. We see this in existing work from Commonwell, from national HIEs that operate across state boundaries. And the success practice in this area is you might want to call it a coordinated punt, which establishes through flow-down language the obligation on provider organizations to appropriately follow state and local regulations regarding supplying and authorizing patients for index and for data retrieval. As a sort of editorial note here, there isn't a universal, even a universal opt-in language. There are some states that, for example, if a patient opts out, actually require that the patient's data be expunged from the index, so you can't even maintain in the index the notion that the patient opted out. In other localities, opt-out means the patient's data can be included in the index, but the patient must be noted as having opted out of, for example, treatment-based exchange. So there's really no universal way of establishing. So the intent of this recommendation is to note there's no universal way of establishing some uniform set of requirements that meet the needs of every state and locality. And instead, what we recommend to the RCE is to establish appropriate flow-down terms to assign this authority or assign responsibility down to the locality and to the provider organization that's responsible for meeting its obligations under state and local law. So hopefully that's...
So just to clarify, the federal government and ONC-HHS do not have authority to define something standard there. Is that the case?
Yeah, so ONC... So I'm going to... If Elise is on, maybe she can correct me on this, but HIPAA establishes what is, in effect, a national floor for patient privacy for example, electronic health information and PHI. But HIPAA acknowledges the rights of states to go above that floor, and HHS-OCR and other federal agencies have no authority to establish a ceiling for activity in this area. So, you know, all that HHS-OCR is authorized to do is clarify and interpret the national floor established by HIPAA, but there's really no way for any federal actor to limit the activities of state and localities unless they conflict with that national floor. I'm going to see if Elise is on or anybody else from the policy office who can clarify my comments.
This is Genevieve. I know I'm not Elise, but that is accurate. Where the state law is a higher bar than HIPAA, HIPAA says that you can't overrule it. If the state has a lower bar than HIPAA, then HIPAA is the floor that you have to meet. So we do not have authority to implement either consent or opt-in, opt-out laws that are universal across all states and always to be followed. Though we certainly do have some leeway around standards for exchanging that consent information.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Genevieve. And I see we have another comment from Erin Murray.
Yes, thank you. So I just want to provide a little bit of coloring on Recommendation 25. And for folks that maybe, like me, really dig into the weeds of the privacy security side of things, what we're asking for a lot of these things is some more clarification and really continuing on the great work that ONC and OCR did in previous working FACAs and others of identifying the various use cases and where the overlap is with HIPAA or FTC or whatnot. Case in point, FTC wouldn't have jurisdiction over a not-for-profit, really is on the for-profit side, versus maybe HIPAA would be. And so I would point people that are really looking at this stuff to look at maybe the API FACA from April of 2016 and how each use case for exchanging data was laid out and what it falls under from a jurisdiction perspective. So those are the kinds of, you know, real-world applicability use cases we're looking for and we recommend further development on, because this can get very, very difficult and very tricky depending on the use case and the circumstance. The other comment I want to make is on Recommendation 26 regarding the individual identity assurance and basically the ciphers and whatnot. You know, it is – this is another one of those items that really, I said earlier, pointing to sort of those universal frameworks is very important that everybody align to so that everybody is following the rules of the road together. So thank you.
Yeah, I'd note in this area that we have, I think, 18 pages overall of recommendations, and there's a lot of interpretive detail behind each of the recommendations that we're offering here. And then in our references section, we point, for example, to the approved FACA recommendations relating to the API task force that Aaron just noted, as well as to the ONC playbook. So there's an ever-expanding circle of guidance here, and in some cases, the issue is pointing to it and finding it, not its existence in the first place. But there's a lot to read here.
Okay, any other thoughts, comments, questions, privacy and security? Seeing, and Ken, is that another comment?
Yeah, just a quick one. If you had ideas for other data points that could be pulled that would help with this area from the US core data set, I think that would be useful. Just one thing I know I was talking to someone who had an idea was, for example, you know, our you know, credit reports know where we've lived, or at least pretty accurately in my experience, where we've lived in our lifetime. It, like that kind of information, I think, could be useful to say, hey, you know, we just matched data from a state that we have no indication you've ever lived there, unless you were there on vacation and happened to be hospitalized. Like, that's a highly unusual place for you to have records. Maybe, probably not right here, but if you have recommendations on what other data points might be potentially feasible to pull into use to help with this data matching, I think, and because I think there's a lot of focus appropriately for getting data, but I think it'd be good to make sure we, you know, we don't accidentally pull the wrong people's data, and for providers to not make wrong decisions based on inappropriate data.
Yeah, we didn't explicitly discuss that in the task force. We do point to the ONC playbook as providing appropriate background relative, for example, to best practices for data handling that enable appropriate patient matching. I also point out that the ONC has done some challenges relating to data matching. There was a report that ONC, a multi-day session that ONC did on data matching, patient matching, and patient matching and linking, and a report out that ONC commissioned in that area. So there's actually a fair amount of information relating to those topics that if you dig around healthit.gov, you'll actually find a ton of information there. As I've commented to ONC in the past, sometimes the challenge isn't that ONC hasn't done the work. It's that there's so much work that's been done that it's actually now a cataloging and indexing problem.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other comments, Robert, I will turn it back to you. I believe we want to do just another call to address any and all recommendations at this point. Did we lose Robert? Okay, I know he was having a issue with his phone, so I will just poll the members again just to see if there is any recommendation you'd like to revisit, all of the 26, or any other thoughts or edits or recommendations for the task force to consider before we move to a vote. And I see Ken, and then Sasha, and then Christina.
Thanks, Sai, for multiple comments. I really like the initial comments around making the functional requirements clear, not necessarily with the you know, nitty gritty details of how you get to it. And one suggestion there, maybe just completely related to it, is in the area of like this matching, I think it might be useful to say, like, you know, what is the recommendation and expectation from, you know, the government and from this committee, et cetera, on how accurate it should be. I can imagine something like, hey, you know, we expect that if you do a random sampling of, you know, your patients and your matching, that, you know, you will get, you won't accidentally match the wrong patient That only happened one out of 100 patients or one out of 1,000 patients. I assume there are some thoughts on how often that kind of thing should be happening. And I think getting, I don't know if you can put it down on paper, but I think getting some sort of, you know, sense of what is that expectation functionally, I think would be useful to know that, oh yeah, you know, the expectation is 99% of the time we'll be right, and that's worth it even if you're wrong 1% of the time, that kind of thing.
Thanks, Ken. Sasha?
Hello, this is Sasha, and I wanted to, I guess, thank again Denise and Arian for leading the task force through all of this material. I know from participating that there was certainly a lot to cover, and as is noted at the bottom of slide 36 here, there were many other things that we might have discussed within the task force and didn't have chance because of the directives provided by ONC and the time constraints of already meeting a great deal over the last month. One area that I think we should at least note that we did not discuss within the task force before we take a vote is sort of potential different alternatives to the model proposed in the Trusted Exchange Framework draft. So there was not conversation about alternatives to an RCE structure with qualifying health information networks or comparisons of other possibilities that might have been implemented under the language in 21st century cures. Some of that, I think there's openness in the language in 21st century cures that might have permitted other things, but that was not something that we had the opportunity to address.
Thank you, Sasha. We will note that. Christina?
Yes, thank you. In your recommendations, you've pointed out that the framework highlights individual access as a principle, but does not specify how patients and other individuals participate fully equally to access the information. I would like to suggest that we recommend that when the QHINs are established, ONC ensures that there is a dedicated QHIN that focuses solely on patients and individual access to their health information and provides that educational resources for patients to better understand what is in their health records and get that access. So basically a QHIN that is doesn't have patient access as part of what it does, but really focuses on individuals as their main group that they're advocating for in the larger ecosystem.
Thank you, Christina. Stephen, yes. I saw your hand. Did you mean to put it back down?
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks.
I want to point out with regard to the patient and individual access, the current recommendations don't go exactly in that direction. Instead, that they recommend that the RCE fully establish, that the RCE represent the patient point of view and the patient perspective, and that there be an established patient representative on the RCE to make sure that the overall ecosystem is responsive to the needs of patients as well as multiple provider organizations. So I think those comments are captured in the task force recommendations, just not that specific enablement.
Thanks, Arian. Okay, now Stephen.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow on to Christina's comment, and I think that patient access will end up coming through multiple QHINs, and that they should all, or as far as possible, be sensitive to that use case. I also imagine that there will end up being potentially more than one that may have as its primary focus the patient access use case. I think the market will really drive that.
Thank you, Stephen. Let me just do a quick audio check. Do we have Robert back on the line yet? Okay. Seeing no other comments or questions, Carolyn, I'm going to turn it over to you to walk us through the voting. And just as a reminder, we are voting on the full set of recommendations, all 26. And I'll just check one more time. Do we have Robert yet? Okay. Carolyn, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. So we need a motion or recommendation to accept the guidelines as they are. Do we have that or recommendations for changes?
Recommended.
So we have a recommendation to accept recommendations proposed by the TEF Task Force. Do we have a second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Those who oppose? Those who abstain? Okay, the vote is now closed. We have a clear number of votes in favor of the motion. Hand it back to you, Lauren.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thanks again to everyone for the thoughtful comments and questions in response to the task force. So we will finalize the recommendations from the committee to the national coordinator here at ONC, and we will confirm that with the members offline after the meeting. Any other outstanding thoughts or comments or questions before we go to public comment? Hearing none, operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
Yes, thank you. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate that your comment line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys to make your comment.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, we'll ask everyone to limit their comments to no more than 3 minutes. Operator, do we have any public comments in the queue at this time?
No public comments at this time.
Okay. We'll give it another 30 seconds, and then we'll check back to see if there are any public comments. In the meantime, I will just remind everyone that our next meeting will be April 18th. That is an in-person meeting here in D.C. Just a note to the committee and the public as well. We have a location change in the hotel. You can find that information on our website for the public and as well as the members. You should have received that information on yesterday. The USCDI Task Force will continue to meet over the next several weeks, and we are looking to see their final draft recommendations, I should say, at the April meeting as well. So continued discussion for both relating to USCDI, and agenda and materials will be sent closer to that meeting. I will check back in. Operator, do we have any public comments at this time?
Yes, we do. We have a public comment from Erin Richardson with Federation of American Hospitals.
Thank you. Go ahead, Erin.
Hi. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I will keep this short and sweet. I think thank you very much for allowing us to listen to today. It was very interesting to see your recommendations. I think one recommendation that the Federation put forth to ONC and continues to have based on the number of recommendations you all have here, it seems that there's a lot of outstanding issues and a lot of outstanding questions and kind of core questions that go to the heart of the TEFCA and it working for everyone involved. And I think we would really like to see a second round or a second draft before this goes final so that these things can be addressed and people can see the various changes before it moves into the final form.
Thank you, Erin. Operator, do we have another comment?
Yes, we have a comment from Leslie Kelly Hall with HealthTrack.
Thank you.
Hi, Leslie Kelly Hall from, thank you for allowing me to speak. Hi, guys. So I would like to echo Christine's comments about having really defined patient advocacy and sponsorship throughout this work because there isn't a natural sponsor for patients, either in terms of influence or commercial sponsorship, to advocate for particular standards or interoperability. So I encourage ONC to take on that role. And further, as a former CIO, when I provided 12 years of access to the patient record, including open notes, the calls to the physicians went up about 30% in 1 week's time, and the burden was overwhelming as providers tried to explain what the records meant. When connecting patient education, the calls went down 12% from the original point of non-access. And so this is important to have ability for patients to understand that their care that they're having, and access without explanation just puts continued burden on physicians. So thank you for allowing me to comment.
Thank you, Leslie. Operator, do we have another comment?
No comments at this time.
Okay. I just want to circle back. Were there any HITECH members who did not announce themselves at the top of the call? Do we have Clem, Cynthia, Michael, or Patrick on the line? Chesley or Kate Goodrich? Okay. With that, we will adjourn. Again, I want to thank all the members for their time and efforts, especially the TEF task force. And we will talk again next month. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.